I want to introduce you this morning to someone called Larry Walters. Has anyone heard of Larry Walters? Oh, a couple of people. Okay, he was a truck driver in San Pedro, which is near Los Angeles. And at 33 years old, he was so bored with his life. He had the usual routine of sitting, watching TV. He was a truck driver, and his life was not very exciting. So one Saturday, he decided to do something different. He went shopping, and he bought 40 weather balloons. He got some helium, he got his deck chair, and he secured the deck chair to the ground and then filled the balloons with the helium and tied them to his chair. He donned a parachute, grabbed some sandwiches, a six-pack of Miller Lite, and his pellet gun. Then he proceeded to cut the anchoring ropes, and he went off into the sky. He quickly ascended to 16,000 feet. He drifted into the controlled airspace of LAX Airport. In fact, a Pan-American pilot reported that there was a man in his deck chair outside of his window. After some times, when Larry felt that he had done enough, he started to shoot some balloons and slowly moved back down towards the ground. He didn't land straight on the ground. He made a little bit of an accident and ended up hitting some electrical cables. As soon as he landed, he was arrested for entering controlled airspace. He made the front page of Timex he made the front page of the news and starred in a Timex advert. When asked about his motivation, he said, "It was something I just had to do. I couldn't just sit there." He quit his job and became a motivational speaker for a little while. But later he took his own life. This man's defining moment of his life, the moment when he differentiated himself from all the other truck drivers, was when he decided to take these balloons and ascend to 16,000 feet. This morning, we're going to look at defining moments. We're going to look at a moment that defined someone's life. We're going to look at Daniel's life and the moment that defined his life. And you may know stories. Many of us know stories from this book. We know about Daniel in the lion's den. But actually, chapter 1 of the book of Daniel tells us about his defining moment, the moment that shaped everything else. And we're going to start our new series, which is called One Thing Remains. Times change, we know that. We've been through huge change in this season. Times change, but one thing remains. Our God remains, and we're going to look at that. And for David, for Daniel, his defining moment was when it came to wine and meat. I'm going to read from Daniel chapter 1. If you've got your Bible, you might want to open it up. I'm going to read all of the first chapter. So it says this, it says, "In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with some of the vessels of the house of God. And he brought them to the land of Shinar, to the house of his God. And he placed the vessels in the treasury of his God. Then the king commanded Ashpenaz, his chief eunuch, to bring some of the people of Israel, both of the royal family and of the nobility, youths without blemish, of good appearance, skillful in all wisdom, endowed with knowledge, understanding and learning, and competent to stand at the king's palace, and to teach them the literature and language of the Chaldeans. The king assigned them a daily portion of the food that the king ate, and of the wine that he drank. They were to be educated for 3 years, and at the end of that time they were to stand before the king. Among these were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah of the tribe of Judah. And the chief of the eunuchs gave them these names. Daniel he called Belshazzar, Hananiah he called Shadrach, Mishael he called Meshach, and Azariah he called Abednego. But Daniel resolved that he would not defile himself with the king's food or with the wine that he drank. Therefore, he asked the chief of the eunuchs to allow him not to defile himself. And God gave Daniel favor and compassion in the sight of the chief of the eunuchs. And the chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, I fear my lord the king, who assigned you your food and drink. For why should he see that you are in worse condition than the youths who are of your own age? So you would endanger my head with the king. Then Daniel said to the steward whom the chief of the eunuchs had assigned over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, test your servants for 10 days. Let us be given vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let our appearance and the appearance of the youths who eat the king's food be observed by you. And deal with your servants according to what you see. So he listened to them in this matter and tested them for 10 days. At the end of 10 days, it was seen that they were better in appearance and fatter in flesh than all the youths who ate the king's food. So the steward took away their food and the wine they were to drink and gave them vegetables. As for these four youths, God gave them learning and skill in all literature and wisdom. And Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. At the end of time, when the king had commanded that they should be brought in, the chief of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. And the king spoke with them. And among all of them, none was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore, they stood before the king. And in every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters that were in all his kingdom. And Daniel was there until the first year of King Cyrus. I want to give you the context for this. Now, our drama showed some of the challenges for these young men. They were taken from their land. But the context, and very clearly we're told, is that God did this. God did it. The land of Israel, Jerusalem, was overtaken by the Babylonians. God did it. God brought Daniel and his friends to the kingdom of the Chaldeans. And the reason for this, and I'm pretty sure Daniel would have been well aware of this, the reason for this is because Israel hadn't defined itself. Talking about defining moments, Israel as a nation hadn't defined themselves from the nations around them. They just went along with what everyone else was doing. If you looked at them, you wouldn't tell they were any different from the rest of the kingdoms around, because they just did the same thing as everyone else. And God warned them. He said, if you keep doing this, you will be taken from the land that I've given you. And they've discovered this. They discovered that actually God had been merciful. He'd waited years and years. That they'd just slowly gone on their downward cycle. He'd waited years. He'd sent prophets to remind them, to tell them to change their ways. And they hadn't. And this is where they end up. They end up in Babylon. And this is the first of 3 times that the Babylonians would attack Jerusalem. Daniel is the first of a group who would be taken from their homeland and taken to another land. And if we look at Daniel and his friends, they're taken away. The land that they would go into would be alien. The way that they wrote in this land is called cuneiform, which is like little markings in clay. If you go to the British Museum or you go elsewhere, you can see it took years to understand this. And they would have to do this 3-year degree of learning the customs and the culture of the Babylonians. Their names, which represented the God of Israel, which reminded them of who he is, they were all changed to speak of the gods of Babylon. The idea was to slowly move them from Israelites to be more like Babylonians, to become more like that culture. They would have different input, they would be able to share wisdom with the king, but they would fully understand what Babylon was about, and they would be fully for Babylon in these 3 years. This is what Daniel was faced with. He was in a foreign land. And as I read this, and as I thought about the situation that's come to light, I think, during this time of lockdown, I think this account of what happens to Daniel speaks of what's happened before to others, through slavery, through racism. And I've been very challenged by what's happened with the Black Lives Matter and with other things. I've been very challenged by this. And from this account, we know that God brings this nation into Babylon. But God holds the Babylonians accountable for what they do. They are not a nice people, the Babylonians. We have to remember this. They are not a nice people. And God holds them accountable. I want to say this changing of names, it's horrible for what they face. But we're going to look at a minute at Daniel's response. But I want to encourage you. I am a white British guy, and I feel challenged by the stuff that's coming out. And I want to encourage you, if you're not feeling that challenge, read some of the stuff, seek to understand, because the way that we're going to become a people who are closely together, who are in God's purposes and plans, is when we understand each other more deeply and we understand, I don't experience racism. I've been reading a book, and I can thoroughly recommend it to you. It's called We Need to Talk About Race, Understanding the Black Experience in White Majority Churches. Read it. One of the things that this said to me was, it said, how often a day do you think about your colour? I don't think about my colour. And I want to help build a church that is truly inclusive. And we see that across the ranks. And one of the ways that I know that that's going to happen with me and with us is if we seek to understand each other better. Okay, it's not just about reading a book, but I want to encourage you, because we look at things like this, and this experience is experience that still has an impact on our nation. I don't know if you know, but probably most of the people in this room, you've paid taxes that have paid to go towards paying off the debt of slavery. 2015, we stopped paying taxes towards paying that debt. That's the impact that it's had. And I want to tell you that we're on a journey to try and do all we can to be more and more inclusive. And I say that, and I want you to speak to me, I want you to challenge me, because I want to see God's beautiful church of all nations, of all races, coming together in something that's incredibly beautiful. But it means that I need to change, that I need to recognize that God's going to change and shape me. Because if I just do everything that's comfortable for me as a white British man, it's not going to be comfortable for everyone else. So I'll put that before you, because I couldn't read these verses without thinking about some of the things that we've been facing as a nation and is going on around the world, and it's awful. But I want to look at Daniel's response, and this is what defines him. And he goes into this foreign culture, and he's enrolled in this thing, and this king will kill him if he's not up to standard. And Daniel recognizes that there are some things that I'm going to have to do. There are some things that are going to be different. I'm going to have to learn this stuff. I'm going to have to learn. But he recognizes that I'm different. He recognizes that I need to define myself. I can't just go along with everything that's happening. I've got to define myself. And the moment and the thing that he chooses, that he believes, is food. Food and drink. Why? We might think, is this like, is the Bible promoting veganism? I know it's like a trend, but like, what's going on here? No, this is about food being offered to gods and sacrificed. And Daniel knew he had to keep himself pure. He didn't want to go along with the tide. And Daniel believed, he had a deep-seated belief that God's ways were right. He goes to the chief eunuch and he says, test us for 10 days. This is him saying, I believe God will act. I believe that you will see a difference in us because God's going to hold us up. And he says, test us for 10 days and see. Daniel raised himself above the rest of his ranks, his class, and said, we're not going with that. We're going to go what we believe God is telling us is right. And 10 days pass, At the end of 10 days, they look better than the rest of their peers. And we see that God blesses them. They experience God's incredible favor in a foreign land. We read that God gave Daniel favor and compassion in the sight of the eunuchs to go along with this test. God gave. And then we see at the bottom, God gave them ability. They were able to grasp this foreign culture, this foreign language to study. They were able to grasp it, and they were better than the rest of their class. Some of you studying, you're like, all right, I'm going to pray for some of that. I want to see God make me better than the rest of my class. It's not quite like that, but God gave them favor as they made a stand for him, as they made a stand for what they knew was right. God gave them favor. God gave them ability. He gave them gifts. It says, God gave them learning and skill in all literature and wisdom. And Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. And we'll see that unpack. But the other thing he gave them was, he gave Daniel longevity. Daniel is going to see 7 different Babylonian kings. And he's going to be in the court all the time. He's going to see the first king of the Persian Empire. Daniel's going to see that. And it's because at this moment, this defining moment of his life, he chooses, I'm not going along with the culture. I'm going to go with what I know is right. For some of us today, I believe that God is speaking to us about a defining moment. If we look through the Bible, there are many of the people in the Bible hit this moment of a defining moment, of a decision to make. Joseph had a defining moment when the lady comes on to him and he says no. He gets thrown in jail. He chose to do what was right and God blessed him. David, when he's in the cave and Saul is there and his friends are saying, you're the Lord's anointed, you're the one who should be king. And he says, no, I won't raise my hand against the Lord's anointed. He chooses to trust God. And Jesus, as he was tempted, various temptations to say, actually, you can have what should be yours sooner. When he's in the garden, he's tempted. He is aware of the incredible pain he's going to suffer. He's aware of the alienation from God, of the weight of the sins of the world. And he chooses to say, no, I'm going along with what God says. I want to talk to you this morning about your defining moment. Maybe there's a line that you need to draw this morning. Maybe it's a line about something that you're doing that you know is not helpful and God's talking to you about drawing a line and not doing that thing, not going that way. For some, maybe it's a way of thinking. Maybe you think, hey, I'm a timid person. That's not my way of doing things. And God wants to say to you, no, draw a line. I've given you a spirit of power, love, and self-control. This is who you are. For some, maybe it's fear. Maybe fear has just crippled you in this time. And God wants to say, draw a line. Trust me to help you. Give me that fear. Surrender that fear to me now. I want to encourage you. Liz and Grace are going to come and sing a song. I'd like to encourage you to respond. The words won't come up on the screen. This is a moment for you and God. And just to respond to what he's been saying to you. If he's been telling you to do something, respond to him. Open your arms. Surrender afresh to him. Ask him to use you for his kingdom and for his power.